All right. Well, tonight we look at another story from David's life. This is part four of this series, and it's a wilderness story. Now, in the Bible, there's a number of wilderness stories, and they usually refer to actual, real, physical, literal wilderness. The most obvious one that many of us can think about is the Israelites wandering in the wilderness of the Sinai Peninsula for 40 years. And the image that we get when we see what that might have looked like is this dry and dusty and barren and foreboding land. Now, I know a little bit what this looks like, and many of you do as well. About 10 years ago, I went on a backpacking trip to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And I don't know if any of you have ever done that, but it's a similar sort of feel when you get down there. And we got to a point on this trip where we ran out of water. And we had none, and we were looking for water. And we weren't all the way at the bottom, so the Colorado River is at the bottom. We were about 1,000 feet still above that on what's called the Tonto Platform. But we were 4,000 feet below the rim, and you're down there, and there's just nothing. There's no life. There's nothing that's really that green. It's dry. It's hot. The sun is beating down on you. Again, it's barren, and it's desolate, and it's a foreboding wilderness place. A lot of us have been to a physical, real, literal wilderness like that. But some of us have also been to a spiritual or maybe a figurative wilderness. And that pops up in the Bible all over the place as well. People that go through these seasons in their lives, and we often know what this looks like, where you just go through one of those times and you're not really sure where you're going. There's more questions than answers. It's just not really clear the way forward. It's fuzzy. It just feels dry. It just feels like there's no water. There's really no hope. You're just not sure where to go or what to do. Sometimes we go through little like wilderness experiences, you know, like maybe it's just a day or a week where you come home from your job and you're just scratching your head again going, ugh. How long do I keep doing this? Is this really what I want to keep doing? I don't think so. I can't take it anymore. Like, is this like what, you know, and it just feels like kind of a wilderness experience. Or maybe there's a relationship, whether it's a friend or somebody you're dating or a spouse, and for whatever reason, you're just not connecting with them anymore. And you can't even put your finger on it. You don't know why. It's just something's different. And you just want to get back to that place where it was better, but you don't know how, and it's just fuzzy. You're not sure how to get back there. Or sometimes it's not just a day, or it's not just a week. It might be months. It might be years where you hit rock bottom financially. And you realize as you look at the numbers and you look at the books that you're just barely treading water, and really you're not even treading water, like you're sinking. And you have no idea how to get out of it. Or your marriage is in crisis and you have no idea the way forward. Or a bad habit has caught up with you and you don't know. It's like you're caught in a cycle and you're spiraling and you don't know how to get out of it. Or maybe it's depression. And, you know, we don't talk about that much because we don't think anyone else goes through depression like we do sometimes. But there's those seasons where you just don't even feel like getting up out of bed in the morning. You're in the wilderness. And we all go through that. We tend to think we're the only ones, and yet we all go through that. And that was a significant part of David's life and David's story. In fact, I love what Eugene Peterson writes about this. Many of you are reading this book along with this series. We talked about that the first week, and if you're new, we've got some study guides where we can tell you what we're doing in this series in David, and you can pick that up on your way out. But I love what Eugene Peterson said if you read the chapter this week. He writes this: David didn't start out in the wilderness, and he didn't end up in the wilderness, but he did spend some highly significant years in the wilderness. Everybody, at least everybody who has anything to do with God, spends time in the wilderness. We all spend time there at some point. And probably a lot of us in this room could even point to a place in our lives right now where we might feel like it's a little bit of the wilderness. And that was David's story, and that's what we're going to look at tonight. And in fact, for David, it was both a spiritual and a very physical wilderness. You might remember when we started this series, God came to this young guy named David and he said, "You're going to be the next king of Israel." Saul, the first king of Israel, has been a failure. Like, he has dropped the ball big time. And so I'm looking for another king who's going to be good, and I've picked you. I see something in you. You're going to be it. And then next thing you know, there's a story of this young teenage boy walking across the valley with the Philistines on one side, the armies of Israel on the other, and he slays the giant Goliath. And suddenly his popularity soars, and suddenly this unknown guy from this unknown village becomes like the man, the guy in the kingdom. And everyone falls in love with David. The women fall in love with David. In fact, Saul's daughter falls in love with David. And then Saul's son, his firstborn son, who's the guy who's up in line to be the next king of Israel. He would be the next king. He had every reason, as we said last week, to resent or hate or feel threatened by David, and yet he becomes best friends with David. And suddenly Saul realizes everyone is turning to David. And if he doesn't do something about it, he's going to lose his job. And so Saul sets out to eliminate David. And he basically goes crazy. He can't understand why everyone loves David. He can't understand why his daughter, who ends up marrying David, why she loves him so much, why Jonathan loves him so much. And so, get this. One time Saul, he basically marries off his daughter to David. And in that, he has this scheme, this plan, where he tries to get David killed. And it doesn't work. And then one day, David's in his house, and he gets so fed up with him that he tries to kill him with his bare hands, and it doesn't work. And that happens a couple of times. It's like this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of thing, where the father-in-law like loves him, and then he tries to kill him. I don't know if you ever had that experience. And then it gets so bad that he decides to send his army to David's house, where David and his daughter live, and to surround the house and then take David captive and kill David. And so Saul's daughter and Saul's son help David escape from Saul. So talk about like family dysfunction. You think your family's dysfunctional? Like, you got nothing on Saul and his family. I mean, this is right here in the Bible. These aren't perfect people. These are very messed up people. But there's nothing boring about it. So they go in and they try to he tries to capture David. David escapes into the wilderness of Judah. He takes a few men with him. Saul rallies a whole bunch more men to chase after him. And then David spends not days, not weeks, not months, years fleeing from Saul in the wilderness of Judah, night after night, going from different camp to different camp, trying to stay one step ahead, trying to save his life, sleeping in a different cave every night, fleeing from Saul and the imminent death that would follow. I mean, talk about being in the wilderness. And we have all kinds of prayers from David during this time. David cries out to God, much like Trey was talking about earlier. He cries out and he says, "God, are you even there? Do you even hear me? Do you see what's going on in my life right now? Will you answer me? How long is this going to go on? How long are my enemies going to chase after me? Have you abandoned me, God? Do you love me? I'm lonely. I'm desperate. I'm hopeless." He prays these kind of prayers from the wilderness. And many of us know what that's like. Some of us have prayed those same kinds of prayers. It's so discouraging. We feel like we're in a situation and there's no easy way out. It just feels dark. It feels like there's no light. And we're just kind of groping our way forward. Meanwhile, we're hearing nothing from God. And for David, there's one specific episode in this wilderness time that highlights this maybe more than any other. It's when David finds himself in a cave one day. And it's in 1 Samuel chapter 24. If you want to turn there, you can. But if not, we'll put the verses on the screen. But this is what it says with this story. It says in verse 1, "After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines." So Saul had actually kept fighting against the Philistines. He would fight the Philistines, and then he would start looking for David. And he'd go back to the Philistines, and then he would start pursuing David. And that's what happens here. It says, "After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, 'David is in the desert of En-Gedi.' And so Saul took 3,000 able young men from all of Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. He came to the sheep pens along the way, and a cave was there, and David and his men were far back in the cave. So this could be the end for David. This is, all this running for nothing. Saul has finally caught up with him. Saul has finally found him. This could be the end. But let's go back and read that, because I left out one important detail. Look at what it says, starting in verse 3. It says, Saul came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave, and the men said, "This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, 'I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" So get the picture here. The king of Israel needs to relieve himself. And when you're walking and marching along with 3,000, soldiers, and you're just one of the soldiers and you need to relieve yourself, you just kind of peel off the line, you go do your thing, you jump back in, and you're good to go. But when you're the king, it's, hold up, stop the procession, let's find a nice, cool, shady, private spot for the king. Everyone stops, everyone sits down. There's a cave up there on the hill. A couple of guards march up with Saul. He goes up into the cave to do his thing. And if you're David, you're sitting in the back of the cave hiding. Now think about this. Put yourself in his shoes for a second. You have been running for days, for weeks, maybe for years from this guy. He has been trying to kill you. Everything is going horribly. And you're crouched in the back and you hear, you saw that the armies are passing. You hope they pass and then they stop and then they come up and then all of a sudden, King Saul walks into the front of the cave and he takes off his armor and he takes off his sword and he lays it at the side and he takes off his robe and he lays it there. And then, I know it's a bit crude, but it's the Bible. He starts doing his thing. And David and his men are hiding in the back of the cave. Coincidence? What do you think David and his men are thinking? This is the day we've been praying for. This is the day we've been longing for. This is everything we could ever want. He's right there in front. He's by himself. He's, unprotected, as vulnerable as could be. It couldn't be any easier for David to sneak right up there, take his sword out, chop his head off, which David wasn't shy about doing. That's what he did with Goliath. David was a warrior. He could have walked right up, chopped his head out, grabbed his head, walked to the front of the cave, walked out, held it up to the men, declared himself king, and he would be back in the palace as king over Israel the next evening. The stars couldn't have been more lined up. But look at how David responds. Next verse, it says, "Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And afterward, David was conscience-stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe. And he said to his men, 'The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord.'" And with these words, David sharply rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. Now, this is amazing. The opportunity couldn't have been more perfect for David to put an end to all his wondering, to all his questioning, to all his prayers. "God, have you abandoned me? God, do you care about me anymore? God, do you really want to make me king? Because it sure doesn't seem like it. Everything in my life was great up until a point, and now I've just been running, and now this guy Saul, he's talking bad about me. He's ruining my reputation. He's telling everyone how terrible I am. He's trying to kill me." Everything looked like this was the opportunity that David should seize, but he doesn't. So why not? Why doesn't he just walk up and kill Saul and be done with it and be able to make his way out of this wilderness experience? Well, the story doesn't tell us explicitly, but I think there's a few hints. Look at what happens next. Verse 8. It says, "Then David went out of the cave, and he called out to Saul, 'My Lord the king.'" So Saul had made his way down to the armies, and they're getting ready to pack up and move on. And David walks out to the front of the cave, and he calls out, and he says, "My Lord the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. He said to Saul, "Why do you listen when men say that David is bent on harming you?" You see, Saul had been spreading these lies. He says, "This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, 'I will not lay my hand on my Lord, because he is the Lord's anointed.' See, my father," he calls him father. "See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand." Like, if you don't believe me, I got proof. Like, look at your robe. You see that spot? Yep, right here. Look at it. "I cut off the corner of your robe, but did not kill you. See that there is nothing in my hand to indicate that I am guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but here you are, hunting me down to take my life." So David comes out. He makes himself known. And then he shows respect, honor. He bows down to the King of Israel. And you see, I think in this moment, one of the reasons that David doesn't kill Saul is because he had this realization. You don't displace or you don't replace something God has put into place. Like you don't go and you don't displace or replace something that God himself has put into place. And so David realized, God's the person that puts kings into place. God's the person that came to me and said, "You're going to be the next king of Israel." And when it's God's time, it's God's time. But until God makes that happen, I'm not the person that makes kings. God is the person that makes kings. And this is huge because David was so desperate in this season. He was hurting. He was wondering what to do. He was in the wilderness. And it's so easy in those moments in the wilderness to simply just take matters into your own hands and do whatever you think is going to get you out of the difficult situation that you're in. And I think it's the same with us. I mean, when we get into tough spots, when we're in those wilderness weeks or those wilderness seasons, everything in us wants to just get out of that. Everything in us wants a solution. Everything in us wants to just do something to get control back. Because usually in those situations, we're not in control. That's why it's a wilderness situation. It's like life is out of our control. And so anything we can do to get it back into our control, to take matters into our own hands. And so usually we come to the point where you say, "That's it. I'm quitting my job. No more. That's it. I'm giving up on the relationship. No more." You know, that's it. I'm giving up on the marriage. I'm going to go out and do what I want. And we have well-meaning friends that'll cheer us on. Like, go. Like, this is it. Like, just go do it. You don't deserve that. You don't need to take that anymore. Just go and do it. And yet for David, he realized that if he followed his friends and his men's well-meaning advice, if he took it and he took matters into his own hands, it could cause a whole lot more problems than solutions. I mean, think about the example that David would set for future kings. I mean, what do you think happens to kings who take the throne by murdering the king before them? What does the future usually look like for them? Maybe David thought forward about the example he would be setting for his children. I mean, think about one day, you know, pulling your son and all his buddies. "Let me tell you the story of how I became king. We were hiding out in a cave, and Saul, the mean king, came in, and he was using the bathroom, and I went up and I killed him." "Oh, Dad, how brave. Like, man, You must have been scared to death to go up and kill a guy going to the bathroom. Like, I mean, you got to imagine that David is thinking ahead and he's going, what kind of legacy is this going to leave? What's the wise thing to do at this point? And think about the second guessing that David might have had if he had gone up and killed Saul. He would have always been asking the question, did God make me king? Or did I make me king? Was I the one that manipulated my way into this new role as king? Or was it God that actually put me there? And he would need that kind of confidence going forward, because he would get into some tough situations. And down the road, when he's in another wilderness or another difficult situation, he would need the confidence to know, God has got me right where God wants me because God put me here. But he might always be second-guessing himself, thinking, maybe I'm the one that put me here. So in light of all that, David must have decided right there in that cave, in that moment, I'm not going to kill Saul. I'm going to try to do the wise thing, as hard as it is. Look at what he says next. He's not done talking to Saul. Verse 12, he continues and says, may the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs that you have done to me. But my hand will not touch you. As the old saying goes, from evildoers come evil deeds. So my hand will not touch you. Against whom has the king of Israel come out? And he almost chastises him here. Who are you pursuing? A dead dog? A flea? May the Lord be our judge and decide between us. May he consider my cause and uphold it. May he vindicate me by delivering me from your hand. Then it said, when David finished saying this, Saul asked, is that your voice, David, my son? And he wept aloud. You see, David shows us here that there's one other thing that kind of went into this decision. He recognized in that moment to leave vengeance and vindication to God. He recognized in that moment with this man who stood before him and took and was taking everything away from him, who had kicked him out of his house, who had taken his wife, who had taken his best friend, who had put him on the run, who had forced him into the wilderness for months and years of his life. It was in that moment, it's like David realized, you know what? I'm going to give this over to God. I'm going to let God bring about his vengeance, and I'm going to let God vindicate me, but I'm not going to be the one to do it myself. It's almost like David, in saying this to Saul, it's almost like he realized in his mind, I'm pretty sure that I'm in the right here, but I'm going to let God be the decider of that. I'm pretty sure Saul is in the wrong here, but I'm going to let God be the judge of that. I'm almost certain that Saul needs to pay some consequences for what he's been doing to me, for the way he's been persecuting me, for the way he wants to kill me. But I'm going to leave it up to God. I'm going to put it in his hands and let him take care of it. It's almost like 1,000 years later, when the Apostle Paul wrote, don't repay evil for evil, leave vengeance to God. It's like David was living that out. Or 1,000 years later, when a guy named Jesus walked around teaching and said, hey, your enemies, you need to love them. When people hurt you, when people slap you, turn the other cheek. When people persecute you, you need to pray for them. It's almost like David was living that out. And he was living it out in one of the darkest, hardest times of his life, wandering around in the wilderness. Now, to put all that together, I think there's two things that we can learn from this story in David's life tonight. Two things that are really hard for us to do when we go through those tough times and when we go through those difficult situations. As we look at David, do you know what he did? He watched for God and he waited for God. When he was in that dark cave that night, when he was running away in the wilderness, when nothing was clear and he didn't know what to do, he watched for God and he waited for God. Watching for God simply means trusting in God's salvation. It means no matter how difficult it is, it means no matter how hard the situation is, it means no matter how mean people are being to you, how lonely you are, how unsure you are how things are going to turn out, you come to God and you say, God, I'm still going to trust you for my salvation. I'm going to trust you for my rescue. I'm going to trust you to deliver me out of this. I'm not going to take matters into my own hands, so I'm just going to look for you. I'm going to watch for how you save me in the midst of this. I love what David writes in Psalm 59 when he first flees into the wilderness. This is what it says. The title is up there. The title is for the director of music to the tune of Do Not Destroy. Wouldn't it be cool to know what that tune was? Brian can maybe play it up here. We could sing Do Not Destroy. Sounds like Metallica or something. But to the tune of Do Not Destroy, this is a psalm of David, a miktam, which was a type of song. And then it tells us when this song was written, when Saul had sent men to watch David's house in order to kill him when he first fled into the wilderness. Look at what David wrote. Deliver me from my enemies, O God. Be my fortress against those who are attacking me. Deliver me from evildoers and save me from those who are after my blood. You are my strength and I watch for you. You, God, are my fortress, my God on whom I can rely. See, in the wilderness, David began by just watching for God. He trusted in God's salvation. But he didn't just watch for God, he also waited for God. And waiting for God means trusting in God's sovereignty. It means recognizing that my timetable and God's timetable are different. And I need to go with God's. It's recognizing that my plans and God's plans might be different. That my vision for my life and how everything should turn out might be different than God's vision for my life and how everything should turn out. And that ultimately I need to trust in Him and His sovereignty. I mean, God's sovereignty, it's like a big word, but it literally just means God has a bigger perspective. God sees the big picture when I don't, even when I'm in the wilderness, and so I'm going to trust in that, and I'm just going to wait for God to move. And I'm not going to take a step forward until I watch and wait for God. Look at what David wrote in another psalm, Psalm 37. He said, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land." You see, in that moment in the cave, David could have taken the easy way out. He could have taken matters into his own hands, and he could have gone right up and killed Saul. But instead, he trusted in God. He watched for God, and he waited for God. Now, maybe for you tonight, that's all that you need to hear. Maybe you're in a situation or there is an area of your life where you simply need to watch for God, and you need to wait for God. Maybe it's a wilderness situation in your job. Maybe it's a wilderness situation in a relationship. Maybe it's just a sticky situation that you've been praying about, that you've been wanting things to change, that you've been longing for things to change, and yet nothing has changed. And everything in you wants to jump in and make something change. And maybe your well-meaning friends are saying, yeah, you know, do it. And maybe all the signs are pointing that way. And maybe all your emotions are leading that way, and our emotions in those moments can do that. I mean, think about David. Think about the emotions that must have been floating around in that cave that day. This man who was like a father to him was trying to kill him. The anger, the resentment, the disillusionment, maybe the hatred. I mean, the emotions, everything must have been channeled to walk up and get rid of this problem once and for all. And yet somehow, some way, David was able to step back and say, no, I'm going to watch for God and I'm going to wait on Him. And so maybe for you tonight, that's all you need to do is make a declaration in your heart. I'm going to watch for Him and I'm going to wait for Him. And I don't know how you do that, but maybe it's a simple prayer of just saying, God, tonight, in this situation, in this area of my life where I feel like I'm floundering, where I feel like things aren't going well anymore, where I just don't know what to do, I'm going to watch for You. And I'm going to wait for You. Let me pray. God, You know all of us and all of our hearts. You know that all of us need to be watching and need to be seeing where You're moving in our lives. And God, for those of us who are going through difficult times or maybe are just having a bad week, God, would You help us watch for You? And more than anything else, would You help us to wait for You? To not take matters into our own hands, to not move forward to try to be our own solution or be our own salvation, but to trust in You for that and to simply wait for You.